DJ, PK, and we're joined by Chris Cameron, a Ute writer for The Athletic. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
So you caught up with Steve Smith. You got a few good stories out of him, didn't you?
Yeah, I asked about 5 questions and got an hour's worth of transcribing. So that's always a good thing in retrospect, so no complaints there.
How'd you go about getting in touch with him?
Oh, you know, PK, I have my ways.
I mean, but in terms of, was it something that he wanted to do? Not, I'm not asking for details, but I meant...
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, it was just something that I know some of people that know him, and I just said, hey, we're living in quarantine. I have nothing really to write about outside of speculation of when college football is going to return. Steve Smith graduated 20 years ago. It's his birthday coming up. Would he be willing to chat with me? And then an unknown number called last week. I picked up. He said, this is Steve, and away we went.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, to just see how the story came about rather than, you know, who gave his phone number. That's not what I was interested in.
Oh, no, I know. It's just a, you know, we're all trying to get as creative as possible during this time. And I had never spoken to Steve, and the timeliness of it being, you know, 20 years ago, the fact it's for his birthday, and I know that Steve has good stories, and people have good stories about Steve. So I figured I would dive headfirst into that well and hopefully come out with something. And luckily, people remember Steve for obvious reasons because of how good he was and how much he liked to compete and fight and chat. And that's basically what the story is people just recounting the old days of kind of the launching pad of Steve Smith, so to speak.
So there are a lot of stories, and some of them reveal something about Steve. Some of them reveal along the way things about college football. And one thing that always interests me that I think is really unknown or underestimated by the public is how much time the coaches spend trying to know what kind of person they're recruiting and the depths they will go. And I found the Taco Bell and the timeliness story is like, man, and Fred Graves did go to a point and say, you know, what you could do then and what you can do now. You know, the rules have changed over time. But share some of that, because he was really digging deep to find out who Steve was.
For sure. And what people forget, too, is, you know, Chad Johnson was part of that wide receiving core at Santa Monica College back then. So Utah was also recruiting Chad at the time when they were recruiting Steve. And they were also recruiting a guy named Demetrius Posey, who was one of Steve's best friends, and talking to some folks. He was a Utah signee that tragically passed away in a car accident. So Utah came close to getting all three of these guys to come to their, you know, run-heavy offense 20 years ago. But what Fred was trying to do was he was trying to get to know who Steve was as a person. He'd seen all of his highlights. He'd seen his ability to have game-changing plays and have these crazy punt returns. And Fred had a great anecdote of being able to go watch Steve run track at Santa Monica back then. And at 5'8", he was running the high hurdles, which is pretty rare for a guy that size. So it just showed that he had this kind of off-the-charts athletic ability. But back then, Steve was working at Taco Bell about, you know, I think it was a mile and a half away from Santa Monica campus. So he would go there during lunch to pick up lunch shifts when he didn't have class before practice. And Fred would go down there because outside of being, you know, on the practice facility, Fred knew where to find Steve, and it was at Taco Bell. So Steve would tell his bosses, hey, I'm going to have some college guys stop in here from time to time to just kind of get to know who I am and see if I'm a fit for them. And it's just funny, like you mentioned, DJ, looking back in retrospect, I have a hard time seeing any college coaches, A, showing up to a kid, you know, talking to a kid that's working at Taco Bell, and B, even having the ability to, now considering the restraints of recruiting in the NCAA landscape.
I used to work at Taco Bell for a little bit when I was in college, so I can relate to that.
You did not.
I did.
Oh,
he
did. Tell him the story about the woman.
Oh, yeah. My manager, man, we had a Christmas party, and so I'm like maybe 19 years old, and she was 30, which probably was akin to being 107 when you're 19 years old. And she was hitting on me bad, but I had the good common sense, and she was married, to say, yeah, this isn't happening here. I'll dance a couple of dances with you. Not slow dancing. I practiced social distancing back then. But, yeah, she was hot to trot. But, you know, I was looking for somebody a little bit closer to my age who wasn't married. It seemed like a logical thing to do. I don't know what you guys think.
Good instincts, PK.
A Taco Bell Christmas party where your boss is hitting on you. That sounds like an athletic story. You might have to let me write that, PK.
True story. And did you know that DJ will say, oh, I read this in The Athletic, I read that in The Athletic, because the work computer is on The Athletic. It's not like he subscribes to The Athletic. He's just gravy training someone else's subscription, Chris.
He's cord cutting. Come on, DJ.
Guilty, Your Honor.
He got two jobs. He's making all this money, and he can't freaking pop for good journalism.
I'm spending.
You believe
on,
this guy?
I'm spending on landlines on the Salt Lake Tribune. Leave me alone.
You still have a landline?
Yeah, against my will. That's a long story. We'll get into it later.
He's held against his will on a landline. Who's got a landline, you freaking old timer? Is it rotary dial?
That would be awesome, but no. So tell us another Steve story, one that you particularly loved or surprised you when you heard it, because you talked to a lot of people about
sure.
it.
Yeah. The best one was, and this is a, you know, patting my own back, but this just goes to show that you get good stories by talking to as many people as you can. When I finally got a hold of Andre Dyson a couple weeks ago, he told me that Steve used to wear the hats of the opposing teams that they would play that week just to, like, fire himself up and to get his teammates pissed off at him and the team they're playing. So Steve said when he moved to Salt Lake, he would always go to the local malls, and Fans was a store back then, obviously. And he said Fans used to have all of the Mountain West Conference hats for sale for all of the teams in the Mountain West Conference. So what he would do is, when he had enough money, he would just go buy the hat of the team Utah was playing that week. And Andre told me that story, and I was like, hey, I need you to tell me again, because one, that doesn't make too much sense, and two, I need you to explain to me why. Then he did, and then when I was able to talk to Steve, he was like, oh, yeah, that was my favorite thing. And he said, guys would get pissed off at me. Fred Graves would be like, hey, what's your deal? Why are you wearing UNLV hats the week we're going to play the Rebels? And Steve told him why he was doing it. And it served as an internal motivator for himself. And, you know, I think a lot of people try to get on that level of Michael Jordan. I think with the Last Dance going on, everybody's really excited to talk about his internal ability to motivate himself. And Steve Smith, I will say, is probably as close as it gets to Michael in terms of a story that I've done on somebody that's just always looking for something to use, a slight. You know, Steve always holds a grudge against DJ's Aztecs for choosing to go another route. And that's another piece in the story about how he never forgot what SDSU told him, that he was okay but not good enough for them. And the two games he had against SDSU were some of his best during his time at Utah.
I don't remember the game he played against them in Salt Lake, but in San Diego, a boring defensive struggle, two teams floundering around, and the Utes win 21-7, and he has an 80-yard touchdown catch, and I think he had another score, too. I don't know if it was that long. But the 80-yarder, it was just he just ran by everybody, threw it over the top, and he was gone. It was like these two teams are just grinding out, and this guy is on a different level.
Yeah, he had two catches for 143 yards in that game. Both of them were touchdowns. Yeah. And then the other game, it was 5 for 131, I think, and two touchdowns as well. But that was a blowout. I think Utah beat him by like 21 or something.
So if the Utes can get a Steve Smith back then, who's all that, how come they can't get him now when they're in a Pac-12?
That's a great question, and that's something that I think Utah is going to need in order to get over the hump. I think recruiting and developing skill position players to go with their offensive identity, once you get into the haymaking throws with USC and Oregon, they're just going to need guys to be game changers. And again, it's it's a different time, but it is interesting to look back and say, here was Utah, a run first team, a dedicated play action team that had, you know, Mike Anderson, a future NFL back, that came close to landing Steve Smith, Chad Johnson, and the late Demetrius Posey, who a lot of people think would have been better than all three of those guys if he had been able to come to Utah. So again, it's an interesting dynamic, and Utah needs to figure that out, because I think a lot of it is just fit and style. I'm interested to see if this last year does anything for Utah on the recruiting front. They're in on a couple of big time, you know, 3-4-star wide receivers in Texas and the West Coast. But I think it's one thing to be in on them. It's another thing to land them and be able to develop those guys in order to go with that kind of dedicated running game that Utah is known for.
So I get why it would be hard to bring a 4-star receiver to Utah with a run-oriented offense and a sketchy history of the passing game. But what I don't get is why they can't find the diamonds in the rough that they used to find. There are still players going to the Mountain West Conference who are good players, who get a lot of yards, get a lot of catches, score a lot of touchdowns, go to the NFL in some cases.
Yeah.
That's the part I don't get. Why they lose a 4-star guy to Oregon or USC, I get that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think, can we count Britton Covey as a diamond in the rough?
Probably, yeah, because of the size issue, yeah. Same as, you know, Steve Smith, right? Undersized.
Yeah, Steve Smith. I mean, I think going back a little further, Tim Patrick, I think you can classify as one of those guys. But again, considering Utah's been in the Pac-12 for almost a decade now, the fact that there are only 3 to 4 guys that really come to mind and that Britton's one of them, I think is just Utah has to bust through that glass ceiling and figure it out. And I know when you're watching a team that gives Zach Moss the ball 20 to 25 times a game, as a receiver, you're like, do I really want to go to a place that's going to be dedicating so much to the run game? But I think what Utah has going for it, guys, is that Andy Ludwig's going to always play to his strength of whatever he has at his disposal. He had a generational back in Zach Moss. He had literally the best running back in the history of Utah football, 100-something years. So he's going to go with Zach, which is why I think this year, you know, hopefully when we have a season, it's going to be wild, because it's going to be a Utah offense having to take the load from the defense, where usually it's vice versa. And I don't think we've ever seen Utah return this many skill position players on the outside than they have coming back in 2020.
Yeah, but I still don't think it's going to make a difference. I think that they're going to be a defensive-oriented team, and they're going to play ball possession and punt if things don't go well, and then hope that they stop them. Until I see otherwise, I don't care what the numbers say. That's what I'm going to believe.
Really? I mean, I think the fact that they're replacing so many guys, and that so many of the guys that they're bringing in that they're going to have to rely on playing either have zero experience or very limited amount of experience. I mean, let's not discount the fact that there could be a time, if we play in 2020, that Utah could have as many 4 to 5 true freshmen in the secondary. That's
right.
Unheard of.
But that's why I think go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's why I think it's going to be flipped on its head a little bit. I think if you do have an experienced quarterback in Jake Bentley, if you do have two guys that can be running back by committee, and you have, you know, an All-American candidate in Brant Keithy at tight end, and if everybody's healthy on the outside, I think it could be a totally different offense. I mean, I think we could see, rather than 60-40 run, we could see 55-45 pass or 60-40 pass. I just don't know how much outside of Devin Lloyd, who I think is going to be a very, very, you know, all-conference type linebacker, and Mika Tafua, you have, you know, beef on the inside with some returning guys. But after that, you have literally so many unknowns. I mean,
yeah,
so many unknowns. And that's just kind of unheard of in Utah's era of the Pac-12A, and just like in the last 20 years. I mean, I can't remember the last time Utah lost so many defensive players to the draft and didn't have that many guys behind them that had no experience. So that's why I think, I mean, you could be right, PK, I mean, depending on how they stack up, but that defense is going to take its lumps, man. I mean, there are going to be guys that are going to be going against Keaton Slovis and that air raid offense in like week 5 of the season, in their first season in college football.
Right. But that's why he's going to be getting even more conservative, because I can't afford to put my defense even in a worse position because they're already vulnerable. So the last thing I need is the offense turning the ball over on its 45-yard line or the other team's 45-yard line because my defense is already susceptible. When he had a great defense, he refused to open it up because it's all about protecting the defense. That's his philosophy. So now, when they were sending all these guys to the NFL, they still didn't do it. They still ran it, and I get that. And Zach Moss is all that, and there's no question about it, but I think it's also a product of the system. And here, with a inexperienced defense, I see Kyle clamping down even more because he doesn't want to put them even more at risk.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess as a dreamer, I want the establishment to be flipped on its head. I want the ultimate joker in Kyle Whittingham to just be like, roll the dice and riverboat Kyle. But that probably won't happen.
Well, don't fall in love with a dreamer.
is that a line from your old Taco Bell boss?
I think it's the dearly departed Kenny Rogers.
Ah, the gambler. May he rest in peace.
Exactly.
I think the X factor in here is Andy Ludwig. I think Kyle has more trust in Andy than he's had in any OC he's had in the time he's been there. So there'll be a little bit of wiggle room. And if it goes well, he'll let it go. But how quickly will he say, never mind, run it three times and punt if things aren't going well?
Yeah, I agree.
That's the X factor.
I totally think that dynamic that those two have could potentially change. I just think that with the amount of experience they have coming back on offense, there are going to be games where Utah has no choice but to let it loose and try to outscore people. I mean, against USC, is Utah's defense, who has talent but is crazy inexperienced, going to be able to hold that offense to 21 points?
Well, if you get behind, then the choice is easy. You got to open it up because you got to catch up. So,
yeah.
Right. All right. Hey, we got to run. We appreciate the time. Nice work on the story with Steve. And Chris, we'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Chris Camerani, Utes writer for The Athletic. DJ and PK, Gary Anderson, Aggie football coach, is coming up next. DJ and PK brought to you in part by Zero Res. A clean home is a healthy home. And Zero Res is cleaning carpets right now for just $25 per room. The lowest prices to help out as many people as possible. $25 per room available while space is available. Call Zero Res today for details and restrictions at 801-288-9376.
Take the Zone with you wherever you go.
Let's go.
Download the all-new Zone Sports Network app on your phone and get live streaming of the Zone as well as podcast editions of every show. From Salt Lake to Shanghai, Provo to Portugal, or Ogden to Oslo, wherever you go, we'll tag along.
Let's go.
Download the new Zone app by searching Zone Sports Network wherever you shop for apps. It's the Zone Sports Network app. From 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
DJ, PK, and Gary Anderson, Utah State head football coach. Join us now on 97.5 and 1280 The Zone. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, man. How are we doing?
We are doing well. How are you?
Doing good. Just grinding away every day. So, every day we're one step closer back to getting the kids on campus. So that's what we're doing.
So do you have any idea what that timeline looks like, when that's going to happen?
No, not really. You know, it kind of goes back and forth like everybody sees every day, I think. For us, what we did is we started with this training cycle goes till June 1st, and we have not altered that. We haven't changed it since the day we walked off the second day of spring practice and started up a plan. So we'll get to June 1st, then we'll look at the landscape, and we'll move forward. But, don't know what it looks like, but I know what our kids had some goals and some objectives that they'd set to get through school. They did an awesome job. You know, I've said it many times, but our support staff, all the professors, everybody, we broke records again in our academic performance this last semester in a very unusual situation. And then we also, these kids have some parameters to where they hold themselves accountable individually to their workouts, and they need to meet that come June 1st. And when they walk back in here, they'll be as prepared as they can whenever that date is.
We've seen a lot of things change, Gary, here in these last few weeks, you know, at the pro level, at the college level. And we've talked about how maybe through some of this stuff, there might be changes that could be implemented going forward. And one of the things I'm interested in is recruiting. With social media today, you see all these kids, you know, I've received my 10th offer from Utah State, and then you click on, and you can see all these offers. So recruiting is still going on, as far as I can see from the outside anyway. It's going on full steam ahead. And scholarships are being offered to the classes, to the kids of 2021 and so forth and so on. I'm wondering, do you see any changes that have come about for recruiting virtually and online, whatever it might be, that could stick going forward that the NCAA adopts?
Well, that's a great question, because we're actually still got a couple 2020 spots, and they're looking. We've had a couple commitments that we've gone through the last little bit here, and I think what we've done virtually has really helped us. So I don't know how much it will stick for a young man that can get to your campus, but we've done some things that I believe will really help us in the future for young men that can't get to our campus. And we've kind of always had, you know, some tours and our facilities and some different things like that, but to really take the next step to show these young men who are recruiting right now, you know, possible transfer kids, kids coming back off missions, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of those situations that are out there, and recruit them. We've gone to a lot of the our video guys. Bill Gehr and his crew have just done a tremendous job. One of them is you just hop in a car, and it's like you're driving around campus, and it's not going into buildings or whatever. It's going around campus. It's going around Logan and seeing Logan. We've never had that before to that extent. And then there's the, you know, the campus tours where we walk through and do some things with just, and it's sped up. It's a quick tour. It's probably what would take a half hour to do is sped up and is maybe 5 to 6 minutes. But you get to see the campus. So I think that's been big. We've had more, you know, more communication with FaceTime calls, I would say, with recruits. I like the addition of the ability, and I think this should stick, for a recruit to have an opportunity to actually be part of a position meeting one time. I think that's a fantastic bit of information for our kids from a distance that can't get on our campus. You know, they come here, they can get involved in the meeting, and they see everything. So if anything come out of as a positive to me, it would be the things that we've added that the young men can get when they do get their feet into Logan. They get their families with them, themselves into Logan, and they can see us and see the Utah State as a whole. They should be able to do that from a Zoom, if you will. If we can do that, I think it's a step positive, a step in the right direction for recruiting.
You know, as the CEO, you're responsible for a lot of stuff as a head coach, and some of them is financial and budget and all that. And I wonder about all the talk about conference games only. I've seen some stuff on social media about what that might do to a group of five teams. If it comes to that, what kind of impact does that have on a Mountain West football program going forward?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm sure it will be a big shot. You know, football is a driving force for athletic departments, and it's a big part of any university. Everybody knows that. And so I don't know what the numbers would be. I'm sure it would be substantial, but I do believe this, is that Utah State will be able to sustain and handle whatever adversity comes their way down those lines. And I think what we'll do is we'll work hard as we can to, you know, I see a lot of these professional teams, it seems like now, and they're stepping up and they're kind of saying, hey, well, you know, we need to make sure that we think about the athletes first. And I think that's what, you know, Utah State, and I think ultimately that's what the NCAA will do, regardless of the hit that it's going to take financially. I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, we've shut down the world, so a lot of people aren't real worried about, you know, what takes place. And it seems minor when you start talking about universities and you talk about whatever it may be. Not to say that it is minor, but when you shut down the world and what's gone on, it is minor. So I think we'll make the right decision at Utah State. I think when this is all settles down and we'll battle ourselves back through it, we'll be just fine. The key for me is that we all be team players. You know, every coach, every student athlete that is involved that has an opportunity, there's going to be some sacrifices, and you better accept those sacrifices, and you need to play within the rules that are given in front of you. Don't try to bend them. Don't try to break them. Don't try to tweak them. Do what's right. And if you do that, I think as a school, Utah State, my belief is that we'll, you know, we'll come out of this thing on top and we'll be in a good spot, but we have to understand this is a lot more things more important than a dollar figure for a university right now, just in my own opinion.
You know, I think over the years I've been to all the Mountain West locations, even teams that aren't in the Mountain West anymore, I've been there. And I think one of the things that separates the Mountain West and its strong point is the number of college towns. You know, you got Boise, a little bit bigger place, but still a lot of it revolves around Boise State, Logan, Fort Collins, Laramie, Albuquerque. You know, the university and its sports programs are the biggest thing in there. As far as recruiting, I'm wondering for you, I would think that if you can get kids to Logan and they can be in the atmosphere of Logan and see that it is a true college town and the community really revolves around Utah State, has got to be a plus for you. With you not being able to do that to the level that you were accustomed to, given the situation, has that been any of a detriment?
Absolutely, yes. It's people just, you know, really don't know. And I can give you an example. There's two or three young men that we're still currently recruiting and hoping to get here that have not been to Logan. And, you know, they have done all the things that we can give them that we talked about earlier. They've gone online and just talked to, you know, seen what our coaches are about and talked to our coaches. But until you get the true feel, it's impossible to get the true feel of what Cache Valley is. What I truly love about Cache Valley, you would never be able to get that true feeling until you're here and you spend some time. And it's the same with Utah State University as a whole. And that's not just for student athletes. That's for, you know, any student, I think, as you come up here and you see the town and understand what it is, you said it right. It's a college atmosphere. It's a special place, how tight the kids are together. And I can go on and on, not to ramble about it, but it is a big, big detriment. And we've done everything we possibly can to make that up. But it's not the same.
So flip that. How hard has it been to evaluate guys? You constantly have to do that. If you're not going to have camps, if you can't go to 7-on-7s, if it's hard to fly around the country and meet all the people around a guy to evaluate them, what do you do? And how much is that setting you back?
Yeah, the big thing is when you're sitting as we are, and we always pride ourselves on being a developmental program. That's how I grew up in this profession and learned long ago when I first started working with Coach Mack and all the coaches that I worked with at the different places early in my career. We were always developmental programs, whether it was in the Big Sky or the WAC or even in junior college. And so it is a detriment because we see so much transition and change in the young men that we're recruiting from the time they play their junior year in high school to where all of a sudden now, next time we see them is in camp, you know, as far as physically really going out there and doing what they do is play football. We may see them walking in the hallway or whatever, or on Zoom or FaceTime call or whatever it's going to be. But we don't see them physically until we get them in those camps, and then we see them physically play their senior year. So that's a big, big difference, especially, I believe, for us as we pride ourselves on that young man that was a three-sport athlete. He was, you know, he was 6'1". He was a late mature, a late developer, if you will. And all of a sudden, you know, he's grown 3 inches, and he's still skinny because he plays three sports, but we can develop him into what we see and his genetics and get to know his family, his parents, all those things are such a big part of where we're going. And I think that plays a big part of our team as we move through the future. We brought in 53 new kids last year, and their development is key. And how are they developing now? Some are getting absolutely stronger. We have young men that have gotten stronger through this process. We also have young men that don't have the ability to get stronger because they don't have the facility. So all those things in developmental program are a detriment. But again, I look at it and I say, hey, are you going to just, you know, sit around and whine about it or try to make it work out for you? And I think we've done our best as the strength coaches and, like I say, the video guys and these assistant coaches have done a great job to give us an opportunity to fight and continue to be a developmental program through recruiting and all the other steps in our program.
With no spring ball or organized activities, and I don't know what's going to happen in the summer as far as summer workouts as a team unofficially, how much time do you think you will need for your team leading up to the first game?
Well, I've said all along 8 weeks, and I stick to that. And that's not me just saying, being stubborn and saying, oh, I think it's 8 weeks. That's me talking to a lot of people, talking to other coaches, talking to medical professionals, talking to trainers, talking to strength guys throughout the country that I respect and know very, very well. Now, the plan that the Mountain West has put out there that appears to be one that they like the best, and we as coaches have sat down and communicated. I know there's been trainers and everybody involved. I believe that's going to be very similar to a type of an 8-week scenario. But the bottom line is if it's 6, then it's 6. You know, if it's 4, then I guess it's going to be four. We're going to react and develop to where it's going to be. The key to that is what I've learned over the last month is, you know, you better be ready for anything as a player, as a coach, as a strength coach, as we sit in our medical people, our trainers, and then also for the players. So you better give them a plan to be ready as they possibly can. Now, what that means, I don't know, because it's different for every single kid. But when you walk back in here, I know this, you better be able to run 10 gassers, because if you can't run 10 gassers, everybody, I believe, has a chance to be able to do that. You need to be able to run 10 gassers when you walk back in here. It's just, that's your responsibility, I believe, as a student-athlete. If you walk back in here for Utah State football program, you need to be able to do that. Where your strength moves are and your strength gains are, your strength losses are, really, to me, that's how your body composition is, because there's things you can do if you really want to, doing push-ups, sit-ups, body weight squats, whatever the strength coaches are giving you to be able to sustain and maintain. But at the end, you know, I don't know. If we get 8 weeks, we get eight. If we get six, we get six. If we get four, then I guess we deal with four. But it's our responsibility now to say, hey, we're going to get to June 1st. We'll reestablish it. We're going to get in here hopefully in the middle of June, if not before then. And we're going to start to get you in shape for whatever the season presents. But those are challenges that you look at every single day. And the one thing I've learned through this whole process, I would say, is there isn't structure, and coaches like structure, coaches like plans, coaches like to have the answer. Whether that's the right answer or not, you like to have an answer, and right now sometimes we don't. We've had to deal with that.
How many gassers do you think DJ could run?
Oh, let me see. I saw him last week on TV.
Not.
I'm saying on a good day, if he was mentally into it and gives up where he need to be, I'd give him three. But you would be, you have to play with the Giants, so that means you're going to get 18 seconds to be able to go down the back across the field, the width of the field, so 53 and 53 across.
Yeah, okay. Right.
What do you think, DJ?
The key now, comparing to my youth when I actually did
but
that.
How much recovery is the other key,
that
too? So I'll give you an extra 30 seconds.
That's what I'm getting at.
30.
The key is, how quickly can the training staff drain my left knee? That would be the key.
Yeah, we all have those issues as we grow, right?
That beast would swell up. Yeah, be something out of an Alex Smith documentary, practically.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, because you like to have the answers and all that, and we're hearing, the Pac-12 might be getting ready to play 11 conference games, and one of the reasons would be, well, it'll give you flexibility in the schedule if they're hot spots, and, you know, there could be games into January and February. Are you preparing for all those scenarios, or have you just gone to your AD and your administrators and say, tell me when you know and leave me alone until then?
Yeah, I'm just relying on really. I think the Mountain West again has done a really good job of communicating on a weekly basis with the commissioners on the phone call. The head coaches are on there. We're talking it out, and they're talking to the trainers every week, and they're kind of giving us the landscape that they know of. A lot of those people are on committees and things that they talk about, and it's all over the place, which is 100% expected at this point. But they do give us the scenarios that are out there. And Mountain West has put in their own thoughts as far as what they would like to have at the end of the day, which I think is what you should do as a conference. So there's not one scenario we're really preparing for, other than, again, I need some point of dates in front of me, and that's why we got to June 1st, and we've taken that as a normal training cycle, as if it would have started somewhere in maybe January, and we got to whenever spring ball starts sometime in April. We've kind of taken a cycle like that to make it be a, you know, 6-7-8 week cycle, and strength coaches have just built it up to take them and build them through the cycle to where whatever they're doing, how they're doing it, it has some newness to it. The one thing is, school's over with for us now. I think our kids can have a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel to say, hey, we can, you know, hopefully this thing is going to go and we're going to move forward, and it gives them a little more juice and excitement. So nothing substantial would just say, hey, this is we're planning on this. We're going to try to be ready for whatever comes our way.
Do you think, under the circumstances, that it's going to be harder for newcomers to earn a starting spot this coming season?
Well, again, I think the NCAA has done a great job of allowing some of those newcomers to be involved in meetings and be involved in situations through those Zoom meetings, whether it's a unit meeting, whether it's a team meeting, whether it's an offense or defensive meeting. In our situation, for instance, better opportunities, because it's a tweak within the defensive structure, and it's obviously going to be a tweak within the offensive structure. We're not wholesale changing anything, but there are tweaks, which I think gives you an opportunity without spring ball to kind of hop in on the same page as some of those other kids that were fighting for a spot. We'll expect, you know, heavy competition all the way through our football team from each position all the way through. But as always, we'll lean and we'll say, hey, if we're bringing in a transfer kid or a young man that's whether it's a four-year transfer or a JC transfer, we're bringing them in here for a reason. We'd expect them to, you know, contend and be a starter. If they're not, then we've all failed, including the young man, the coach that recruited him, the position coach that evaluated him, the coordinator, and mostly myself. So we expect those guys to come in and start. Now, does it always happen? No, but, you know, every young kid's going to fight, and every transfer is expected to start.
Well, Gary, we appreciate a few minutes, a few gassers, a few laughs. Thanks for joining us.
That would be interesting. Maybe we'll close it down for you. We'll close down the distance and see what we can get. We'll make it realistic. How about that?
I'm serious about draining my knee, too.
All right. I'll let you off the hook.
Thanks, Gary.
Okay, guys. Have a wonderful day. Go Aggies.
Gary Anderson, head football coach at Utah State. Join us here on 97.5 and 1280 The Zone. Your feedback coming up next. DJ and PK brought to you in part by Larry H. Miller, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, and Sandy. Find your deals online at LHMDeals.com.
And it's all over almost here.
Don't go nowhere.
Time for your feedback, and it is brought to you by Audi Salt Lake City, where you can pick up a new Audi Q5 SUV for only $359 per month. Visit Audi Salt Lake City at 999 South State or AudiSaltLakeCity.com. Question of the day. Clay Helton suggesting the Pac-12 is considering playing only 11 games this season. All would be conference games. What do you think? Eva Marie says, yes, please. We talked about this earlier in the show, PK. Some things are going to be done out of, I don't know, desperation, need. But how many of those things will stick? Because then people realize, wow, this is actually good. I like it. Let's do more of this.
Right.
More conference games. More games in baseball in the time zone, a different schedule for the NBA. Why compete with the NFL? Hey, it's December through August now.
4-point shots.
I don't think that one's coming.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Designated hitter in the National League.
Designated shooter in basketball.
Some 60-year-old guy who's a dead eye from 70 feet.
Hornacek would still be playing.
Right? Riley Jensen, our own Football Insider, tweets at us the 11 conference games. He says, this will kill G5 schools. Although it seems great to have football back, G5 teams will suffer greatly from this. They count on a couple of big money games each year for the health of the program. These schools provide millions of dollars in scholarships. If G5 goes away, those do too. That's doom and gloom right there.
Well, I think, yeah, he's coming from the G5 perspective, being an Aggie. I understand that, but how do we know that that's not going to happen anyway? Because there's been talk of the P5s and maybe even a select group of P5s breaking away. And I think that we're going to see subdivisions within Division I beyond what we already have now. As these teams decide, well, why spread the money, we can keep the money, and so forth. So I view that to an extent as inevitable. It's not something that I author and support and champion, but I understand that that's a realistic possibility, because who knows what it's going to look like down the road, and maybe the G5s will be playing for their own, much like the FCS does now. They could form that type of thing. And for those who are involved, and that sounds like a blow, but at the same time, when Weber's in the semifinals, everybody from Weber is way excited about it, and we're watching it on television at that time of year. So there might be something where they could coexist. But I understand the concern. Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying that's the way to go, but it might go that way anyway.
I think the thing that's kept that from happening, because people have been speculating that, is that a lot of colleges have based their budgets, a lot of the big-time schools have based their budgets on having 7 or sometimes even 8 home games. And
yeah,
they won't get that if they throw the G5s by the wayside.
Right, but if they get more of the TV money, maybe there's more of a wash
right
there.
Yeah.
So there could be somewhat of a push. I don't know that.
No, but that would be the equation that have to work out for it to happen. Whether it works out or not, but that would be the path to making it happen.
Right.
As if the ESPN just gave them a lot more money.
because we know the P5s financially are not going backward. At least they hope they're not. They're going to do everything possible to make sure that that does not happen.
Mountain West just got a new TV contract, and it was a lot more money. It was a big step forward for them. It's, it doesn't come close to what Power Fives are getting, but as a group of five, they're doing pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, and I think particularly as the need for live programming increases, that there's an outlet for those schools.
All right, DJ and PK, we are out of time. Hands of Scotty are coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow right here on 97.5 at 1280 The Zone.